Digital 410 Productions proudly presents the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast with your hosts, Dodd Abernathy, Jeff Copsetta, and Henry Sledge.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast, your favorite World War II based podcast, even though I feel kind of guilty for saying that in present company. But anyhow, it's another Tuesday, Monday night. We are here and we got some big stories to hear from Henry and Layton and all the things that went on in New Orleans that Jeff and I are feeling regretful that we were not a part of. But without any more further ado, speaking of Jeff, Mr. Jeff Copsetta, sir, how are you doing tonight?
Good. I feel like the guest tonight because I've missed the last couple of weeks. I'm sorry about that.
Well, welcome to the show. Speaking of Johnny on the spot and always here and faithful one, Mr. Henry Sledge. Henry, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Doing okay. Doing good.
You holding up? Had a busy weekend.
Yeah. It was good, man. We had a really good time in New Orleans. Dragged this British dude home with me.
Well, I was going to say, for the first time on the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast, this will probably be the closest thing we have to an in-studio guest. So joining us via the satellite office with Mr. Henry Sledge, returning guest nonetheless, Mr. Layton Hughes. Sir, how are you doing, sir?
Yeah, not bad, mate. I don't think the jet lag's kicked in yet, so I think I've passed that point. And I'm great. It's been a great day. It's been a great weekend. So yeah, it's pretty cool to be here.
First and foremost, I was wondering, is this your first time to the States or have you been here previously?
I've been here previously. I went to New York in 2005 and I visited occasionally when I was in the Air Force doing a 24-hour visit to Vegas, in and out, you know, land. Hotel out, get back in time to get the wheels up.
So what you're saying? All your American experiences are going to like the circus. I mean, those are like the biggest tourist traps around. But yeah, so how are you liking a more calm United States as far as not being in New York or Las Vegas?
I love it. It's different. I've said to Henry, you know, when we've been driving around the homes that we've seen, absolutely beautiful. Although he's probably hasn't taken me across the side of the track yet. but the space that people's houses have around you, it's insane. It blows my mind where everything in the UK is very condensed.
It depends on, it depends on where you live and what year in which the homes are built. Obviously, they're built in the 40s, 50s, 60s. They got a more wider space, a bigger yard. Or if you're out in Texas, like where Jeff's at, whereas I'm in Florida, my house was built in 2007, and I think there's probably 14 feet of space between mine and my neighbor's home. So it definitely depends on where you live and what year your house is built. But yeah, there's definitely – that's the nice thing about here is you can get what you want depending on where you want to live, really. But for those who aren't aware of what brings you to town and the going-ons, what make you and Henry so exhausted – Henry, why don't you guys explain to the listening audience of the endeavors in which you guys partake in this weekend?
Yeah, so this weekend at the World War II Museum in New Orleans, it was the 20th anniversary symposium of Band of Brothers. And it actually was it canceled twice because of COVID. So it should have happened like a year and a half ago. COVID kicked that to the curb. But it finally happened. Almost all the actors came in late and came in, at the beautiful World War II Museum and just a fantastic facility. Bruce McKenna, Kirk Sadusky, a lot of the Graham Yost, Tony Toe, John Orloff was there. John Orloff, Jeff, he is the guy who's the main writer for Masters of the Air. So, yeah. So, you know, the creative team and the actors were there. They had a panel or several different panel discussions. And man, it was just cool to be there. I had not been to the museum since 2010. So, you know, it was cool to see all the changes and everything and just how the place has grown. And then to see the actors up there, you know, reminiscing and talking about the making of Band of Brothers and their various interactions and how they got their parts. It was just really cool, man. I mean, just a great, you know, great weekend.
Leighton, what was your opinion of the museum in and of itself, Band of Brothers aside?
I thought it was fantastic. Yeah, like Henry said, it was magnificent. You know, on the Friday when I arrived there, I went across it with you know, the history chick, Sarah, and we started exploring before, you know, Taco joined us. just absolutely incredible. Obviously, we didn't want to spend too long in there because they had, you know, various talks going on. So we attended, you know, the bootcamp talk with Dale Dye and Freddie Joe and Kirk Sadusky, who was moderating that, who was just phenomenal. I had an amazing interaction with him back at the hotel bar just an hour later. Yeah, I thought it was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And we had a really good look around on the Sunday before we left and went through the Road to Tokyo exhibit, is that what you call it? You know, just unbelievable detail. Unbelievable.
And while we were doing that, let me add, well, Leighton did it separately. I went through with my family, but while we were doing that, I had on my WTSB t-shirt. So got us a little. And guys, let me jump in and say this. Not once, but twice.
Twice.
I had some random person come up to me and say, really like your podcast.
That's, you know, that's fantastic because Jeff and I have talked about this in the past. Sometimes we kind of feel like we're doing this for ourselves because we all have such a heavy passion for the topic. And it's like, I don't know, I almost feel like the three of us would get together and do this over a conference call on a phone, even if it wasn't live or being recorded. And it's nice when that happens. Like when you told us that over the text, I told you, you know, that happens to me. It's time to time, but it's usually when I'm at a World War II event where I'm like, I'm in a different state. And so people come from other states around. And, you know, most people, you know, a lot of our listeners, they don't go to our website and, you know, a lot of them don't watch the videos. They watch it in the format in which it's originally intended, which is the audio. And so it's not until they hear me talking to somebody that they're like, oh, you're that guy from that. Yeah, that's. And so I get it from time to time when I'm at an event and people hear my voice. But it's definitely, you know, mind blowing. When I first met.
Yes.
When I went out to Texas to hang out with Jeff. It was a weird situation because he had a young volunteer with him. Not only did this kid say, hey, I'm a big fan of your podcast, but by the way, I briefly went to the same high school you did and your daughter did. So that was even more of a little, holy crap, it is a small world. I flew to Texas to meet a kid who grew up in my same town and went to my same high school with my daughter. So that was even a little crazy. But it's definitely enjoyable, and it's kind of like a almost makes it all – it's one of those things, it definitely makes it worth it when, you know – complete random stranger just walks up. He says, keep doing what you're doing.
Well, and I told you guys about the first one, which was Lance. Yep. Lance Faulkner. The second guy I did not tell you about, but yeah, man, it was cool because, like you say, it's just like, okay, man, people are paying attention. We must be doing something right. So that was cool.
Absolutely. What was your, you know, obviously you guys were there for the Band of Brothers symposium, but what was your overall opinion, you know, before we get into the Band of Brothers stuff, of their Pacific based displays?
You want to go first on that?
Oh, marvelous. I thought it was brilliant. Like I said, yeah, I thought it was absolutely outstanding. It's all done in chronological order. So you're walking along. I definitely saw this for the, you know, the European theater of war was had a map of Europe, and most of mainland Europe was red to signify, you know, that was in, you know, Nazi control. Sure. Obviously, the two gray areas being Portugal and Spain. But as you move along, you know, each, you know, becomes blue. I think it was blue, you know, obviously. So that's the Allies taking over. But, and there's the same for, you know, the Pacific Theater of War as well, and Road to Tokyo. I just, the detail, seeing E.B. Sledge, a little stand for him, and Bazlone, Ernie Pyle, Desmond Doss, I thought it was absolutely outstanding. It was. A lot of time and effort has gone into that display, in my opinion.
When you walk into it, you know, you see, pine tree, you see palm trees, you know, there's they, which like when you're going through the ETO part, you're seeing a part where the Battle of the Bulge, I mean, they have like a video effect of snow falling.
Oh, yeah.
Say again.
I said, oh, yeah. Sorry, we lost Jeff. I'm inviting him while participating in the conversation. So they had like
– I don't want to
– No, they had like palm trees and Imitation Snowfall. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, Imitation Snowfall for the Battle of the Bulge. But yeah, like for walking into the roads of Tokyo, man, the palm trees. I mean, it was, you know, and then like the Tarawa part, pretty cool. The seawall, you know. I thought it was, cool. I love the display. They had a 37 millimeter in a position there. I mean, sandbags, you know, it's, and you know, Richard Frank is the guy who quarterbacked that. So, I mean, you feel good about that. So,
now, I don't know if there's a way to quantify this or it's even justifiable or even comparable, but I think out of the four of us, the only one who could truly now make this comparison would be Leighton. Is there something different the way that, obviously, this is a huge museum, so it may not even be fair, but is there a way or something you notice that's a little bit different the way that they display things compared to maybe some of the larger museums over on your side of the world?
That's a good question.
I mean, once again, it's probably hard to quantify because of, you know, the funding behind it, but there may be something a little different, maybe the terminology, just, I don't know. Like I said, between the four of us, you're probably the only one who could make that comparison.
I mean, yeah, it's been a while since I probably, you know, the Imperial War Museum in London, you know, obviously in Duxford as well. I think the Americans have got it nailed down. Although the museums in the UK are fantastic. It's been a while since I've been to the one in London, so I won't comment too much on that in case I get it wrong, just through memory. But just the level of detail that New Orleans went into, the time, the effort, you can see it. The interactive technologies that they had, you know, with the dog tag, swipe card, I've got my wallet next to me to show you. You walk in, there's a train, you get
given. Oh, yeah, I didn't even walk up to that. You know, can you get on that thing? Or?
Yeah, you just, you know, they give you a card, you know. The train starting up sort of thing. You know, I was with Sarah and it says, you know, put your card here when you're told to, and you get given somebody who served in the war and you get to follow their journey through. So every time you came to a station, you just swiped your card, the information would come up and you can get, you know, at the end of it, you know, you go on the website and you can pull down all their details. At home, so to read up a little bit more, you know, under less pressure of having to move around.
Sure.
I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
So basically they're kind of starting off the presentation, if you will, is everybody who enlisted started out on a train somewhere and went to their basic training. So that's a really cool way to kind of kick off the self-guided tour, if you will.
Absolutely. And it's one person, you know, look at, you're following one person's story. So, you know, not to, you know, put down, you know, say the Pacific or Band of Brothers, you know, with Sledge or Leckie or Winters or Garnier, you know, whose, you know, service career has been well publicized. Sure. You're getting somebody else, you know, who would have served in a different unit in a different battle. So it's, you're highlighting other areas of the service, you know, so it's not just folks on 101st, you know, it's, you're looking at other units. I think that's brilliant. I think it's utterly brilliant.
Absolutely. Cause it's kind of like what we often say, you know, Jeff can, you know, jump in on this too, in the living history world, is we try to keep the memory of those people alive. So here's the museum trying to bring the memory of people that no one really knows about alive. And two, we often say the best way to get people involved is to personalize it.
Absolutely.
When you're building an impression, find someone in your local town or your state and build your impression off of that group, that unit. That way, when people come to your living history event, instead of just hearing about some random people that have no face, here's a group from your same town, quite possibly could be related to. So that's very cool.
Yeah, maybe it was.
The pavilion where they had the symposium, you know, massive, was it the Boeing Pavilion?
Yeah.
Massive room, obviously. And you walk in, and I mean, Jeff, you would have loved it, man. They had a B-17 hanging from the ceiling, had a B-25, a Corsair, P-51 Mustang, TBM or TBF, a Dauntless dive bomber, and I think I'm leaving something out. I mean, it, and then they had these catwalks up several flights of stairs. So, like, my son loved going up there because you could literally walk up to the top catwalk and you're spitting distance from the top of that B-17.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Probably get there and count those rivets.
You could, yeah. I mean, you could look right down in the cockpit. They've got beautifully outfitted or suited up mannequins in the cockpit of the B-17. Now, not like the Corsair or the Dauntless, but and then they just had this beautiful display of some flight jackets up there. I was just, man, it's going to kill us, man. Masters of the Air, I got to get an A2. And they're gonna, you know, they're going to be $1 million after Masters of the Air.
Yep, got to start bidding on them now.
Yeah, I know. Now, y'all need to steer me on the best place to get a good one, because I'm not sure about that.
That would be Jeff. He would have to, when it comes to the Army Air Corps stuff, Jeff would have to lean you in that direction.
We don't have to get into that tonight, Jeff. But I'm going to be hitting you up on what your opinion of the best. Because yeah, I don't want a mall jacket. You know, you can get one that called an A2, and it's really not. I would want one that's pretty damn good, you know.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I was at that museum about 4 years ago, I want to say. It was about November of, I want to say it was 2018. And that was my first time being there. And all the stuff, they got everything. I thought it was really neat. I don't know if they still do it, but kind of an orientation theater where Tom Hanks is a narrator. It was like a 4D experience.
Oh, and Beyond All Boundaries.
Maybe that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. We saw that the last day. Yeah.
Yeah. That was really slick. But I got to say, I there was one thing I was surprised about was I thought there would actually be more artifacts. And I guess I say that because I was still working with National Museum Pacific War at the time that I went to New Orleans.
Sure.
Yeah.
And when you have the amount of artifacts on display that museum does, and then you go to what's supposed to be the museum.
I was
actually a little shocked. I mean, the airplanes and everything, you know, it's like Disney World for World War II, which is great. I mean, it's a memorable experience. It was really cool. Me and my wife went with another couple, and right next to that train is the submarine. Did you guys get to go in the sub? It was same setup. You get a card just based off of, you know, when you're in line, they're just handing them out, and you go to that battle station, and it was really cool. I got to be the torpedo man.
Nice.
Do you remember which sub it was?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. I don't have any idea, but yeah, it was like everybody's having to do their job, and there's little screens in there that kind of coach you as to what you should be doing, and there's a screen kind of all the way around as if you're seeing like a 360 periscope. You can actually see above the waterline, and you can see the Japanese ships out there, and man, they say fire away. I'm hitting that button as quick as I can, launch those torpedoes, and it was a successful mission. We sunk the targets, but we still got hit, and it replicated a specific night where this sub, I think it actually went down, and there was guys climbing out trying to get on the water. So after you go through all this nightmare, like Leighton was saying, you scan that card and you see what happened to your guy. If they went down with the sub, if they were picked up later, or if they, you know, made it out of the sub, but drowned before rescue could get there. So yeah, they, like Don was saying, they humanized it. They made it to where you don't need to know anything about World War II to understand the impact that World War II had on the country and on the world. I guess I just expected, you know, 25,000 artifacts looking at the size of the buildings, and that's not necessarily the case, which I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
That's surprising to me.
But that's a good observation, because I looked at some pictures. Somebody posted a host of pictures on the Nimitz. And now that you mention that, yeah, I mean, looking at that, there was some pretty high-powered artifacts in that place. And that's an interesting and accurate observation, I guess, because I didn't think about that till you said it.
Well, it's interesting you brought that up, because one of the things I was going to ask Leighton, I was speculating, well, you know, European-based museums probably had a lot more artifacts because all our crap was over there. But I guess clearly they would, because apparently the museum has an inordinate lack of actual, you know, artifacts, opposed to this probably all high-dollar displays and presentations.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when I was in Normandy back in June, you've got the tanks there, you've got, you know, the vehicles, you know, the, you know, and you can see where, you know, the rounds have hit. Obviously, they just picked them up from, you know, the barns, or, you know, people have collected them, you know, dragged them off the battlefield and stored them for, you know, and obviously museums come along and picked them up and shoved them in a building. And obviously, it's a lot easier. Obviously, for the States, it's a little bit different because nothing happened, you know, no World War II battles happened on, obviously, mainland America. So a little bit difficult to get all across. So obviously, there's, I think it was a uniform of an African-American U.S. Marine, which was pretty cool. That was amazing to see, who had served in World War II. But yeah, you know, Jeff's right, you know, artifacts, I love to see that. And I did notice that there was a lack of artifacts. But not that it's a bad thing, but I think it adds a lot of context as well to displays.
I'll say this, guys, and Jeff brought up a great point. So Saturday night, we had, I met Jeremy Collins, who's director of symposiums and conferences. We had a couple beers. And, you know, I want to, you guys, I've said this, I want to like build a little outbuilding and have some mannequins in there and, you know, get one suited up in flight gear, one of them dressed up like a Marine, and have some things in there. I'm beginning to think, and I want to do that, but I've got, as you guys know, I have my dad's stuff. And I told Jeremy, I'm beginning to have the thought, I want to get his things into a museum. And there are some things, Jeff, out at the Nimitz. There are some things out there. And 20 years ago, I took some stuff out there. But I've got a lot of things here, as y'all know. And, you know, I kind of broached that subject with Jeremy. Like, you know, I'm starting to think they need to be where more people can see them.
Well, not only that, but I think, and Jeff can definitely, you know, contribute to this because his working with museums, not only do people see them, but I think we as civilians, we underestimate the effort to preserve things. For example, yeah, over my shoulder here, I talked about this in my early episodes. I have a propaganda poster. I bought that poster on eBay, stole it, got it for like $15. But I told myself, hey, I want to hang this thing up. But you can't just hang up a poster. It's going to get sun faded. Luckily, at the time, I did computer work for a frame gallery. So now I have a $13 poster in a frame. Luckily, I did trade on. But that's a $150 frame because it has UV-protected glass. It has acid-resistant paper. And it is museum quality. So that, and behind me, the screen is covering up my window so no sunlight gets in here. And so an effort just to protect a $13 poster that I stole off of eBay because somebody slept on the auction. Luckily, I was able to do trade, but otherwise, I'd have to drop $150 on a frame just so the damn thing doesn't fade and doesn't wither away. And you have artifacts like that of your father's, and you think, well, they're just sitting in a box. Jeff can tell you, just sitting in a box, in the inappropriate box, it will deteriorate.
Yeah. Well, Jeremy can't guarantee anything. I mean, he's got to talk to the curator. I mean, he said, Henry, it'd be awesome, but he said, I can't. And I appreciate his rectitude, you know, but I'm just starting to kind of begin to have that thought, you know, but and not to make it all about that,
yeah.
To go back to the point about maybe some more artifacts would be a good thing, but it was well attended, you know, it was really active, busy. It was good to see that. So
how was the overall Band of Brothers symposium? How did the whole going on outside of just the regular, you know, visiting of the museum and touring the museum, how did the whole organization, the interview process, did they have meet and greets and Q&As and all that stuff with the actors?
Obviously, you know what I do. I don't obviously come too critical. Obviously, you know what I do. We happy few. Honest opinion. Suppose it was fantastic, you know, Chris Langlois, who's Doc Rowe's grandson, spoke fantastically about, you know.
When did he speak? I missed that.
He spoke to he was with Shane Taylor, you had obviously Gene Garnier with Frank John Hughes, you had Robin Lang with Trish Heffron. So that was the family sort of round table.
Okay.
Fantastic. That was I was probably the best talk. I mean, for myself, I've heard a lot of the guys speak quite a lot about their experience, and it's the same stuff. You know, it doesn't really ever change.
Sure.
You know, they've got it nailed down. not that it's a bad thing, because, you know, there are people there who haven't heard those stories. So that's probably my own doing for having listened to a lot of that stuff. You know, the boot camp with, you know, Freddie Joe, Dale, you know, Stokey, fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. You know, Jason O'Meara was the who played on Meehan. It was his first event, so that was pretty fantastic. You know, great to see him there and being invited there, considering he was only there for a short period of time in the show. I'm a guy who goes to conventions. I'm not embarrassed to say that. You know, I'm 40 years old. I'm not impressing anyone. You know, the autograph sessions at the end took a lot of time. It was poorly done, in my opinion. You know, you get the T's and C's. I think it was like, you know, 2 or 3 weeks before the event. And it was like, right, no posters, you know, 2 items, which is fair enough. No posters, no pieces of memorabilia.
Oh, you can have, you can take a seat. We didn't go after the last thing. We got out, went back just to start resting up. We didn't go to the actual signing thing because Leighton had already gotten me a poster, got a bunch of people to sign. So I was good on it. You couldn't have a poster?
No, you couldn't. I was getting mine done in the hotel, which the guys were very happy to do. But for that, there was some guys I couldn't get in the hotel just because I couldn't see them or I'd be missing them by a few minutes. But it was like, oh, you can get a book signed, which you can buy in our bookstore, but we're going to mark the price up an extra $3. Cheers. Or a DVD box set, which you can buy from our bookshop, you know, from the, you know, merchandise store. X amount. Well, I'll just bring my own. But it's just like, I don't want that. I want to display something.
Yeah.
You know, I can't display a box set. So, you know, I think I was in a queue with somebody I met in Normandy in 2019 with his wife, Ryan Muse. Good 2 hours, obviously, in the Louisiana heat.
So it wasn't even in air conditioning. You had to queue up outside?
We had to queue up outside. Wow. Yeah, they obviously moved us all out. Very poorly done, in my opinion. They should have kept it in the pavilion and just had the guys, you know, outside, you know, in the hallway and just done it row by row.
Yeah.
They could have sat down. They could have relaxed and done it that way. But no, they had people queuing. I think when they realized there was a lot of people and it was taking a lot of time, we'll put a water station out there. It took a little while for that to come out. And when you did get in there, because the guys had been signing for so long, you had, I think Jeremy said it was like 500 people there. Yeah. So give and take, you know, 50 people have gone off. So you've got 450 people, you know. So they're signing and your items are just flying down the line. And you've got people ahead talking. And it's just, it was a bit of a jam, you know, and you're not able to, you know, have a good interaction with the guys or girls, you know, as your item's getting signed because people are talking and your item's just flying past.
Yeah.
So a couple of times I had to jump out of line, grab my item and bring it back to where I was because I wanted to say hello to people, you know. I you know, there's people that, you know, Eric Jenderson, you know, who I hooked, you know, who was the writer on 3 episodes, and I was able to hook him in with the Barnes family at Holborn last year. I wanted to know how that was coming along, you know, how his conversations was coming along with those and you know, and others as well. And I did get that chance, but some I didn't because my item flew down the line.
Yeah.
And obviously I'm having to move down the line. So that was probably poor on their part. I could have been a lot better. But overall, the talks were good. They were good.
You know, you said, you know, when you first said no posters, no artifacts, things like that, as far as the signature goes, my first thought is, well, I wonder if they're trying to prevent people from having all this cool stuff signed just to turn around and sell it on eBay. But then you mentioned, well, you can have books or DVDs available in our gift shop. And then it all kind of fell together. But yeah, and there's nothing wrong with trying to sell a book or a DVD. But, and I understand you don't want people walking around with big poster tubes all day, but I mean, if it's something small and it doesn't affect the poor logistics of getting people through, I don't know why it would really matter other than it just seems like they're trying to move some merchandise.
People are getting them done in the hotel, though.
Yeah.
You had but they don't listen to this. A mother-son combo.
Roly-poly.
I mean, I don't want to name names, you know, I'm telling you in trouble. yeah, luckily I don't know their names.
Don't worry, nobody listens with the exception of the two people that said hi to Henry at the museum. So you're
I didn't just use a real name.
They were brutal. I mean, they were the people, you know, and that was the thing. I mean, I saw them. They weren't even staying in the hotel. And I remember coming down for breakfast on the Saturday and they were there outside, you know, the private area where, you know, the cast and crew were waiting. with their items, you know, and when, because obviously they knew that I knew people, because obviously I was speaking to them the day I arrived with Sarah. We were outside chatting with a coffee, and obviously they were asking, you know, who we were, what we did, you know, and et cetera. And because one of the Band of Brothers actors, Mark Lawrence, came across and was talking to me, and we got on very well. You know, she knew that I had a connection, and obviously we've chatted about, you know, the We Happy Few project. So when she saw me, she was always asking me questions. I'm like, I don't know. I'm here. That was the mother. Yeah. You know, I don't know. I'm with the unwashed, you know, for this weekend, yeah. I'm not with the guys. So it was, you know, even on Saturday, I don't know where you were, you know, but they were in the bar. We were at the table, and they were literally sat around in the sort of lobby area, you know, in the little seating area by the concierge. And they were just waiting. I mean, I walked off to go and wash my hands because I'd eaten a burger and my hands were greasy as hell. And she just comes up, oh, you know, do you know where, you know, the guys were, you know? I was like, I don't know. They're having the private food. Well, what time is it finished? I'm like, and they were there waiting. And as soon as they came out, bang, they were there with all the posters. And I thought, you're the reason why now they're not letting us get our posters signed. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the sort of the bad names that, you know, ruin it for the rest of us. And very frustrating. But again, I suppose that's why the museum were doing it. They probably wanted to make a few extra sales as well, because the hotel probably wasn't, you know, priced enough. But no, like I said, it was a great experience, but just frustrating. We couldn't get, you know, posters signed. And I could see why, because of people like that. Not quite the Henry, they're bad people.
Damn it, Henry. There you go, messing up for everybody. Can't take you anywhere. Speaking of,
I just want something signed.
You know,
I didn't even go to that, man. We were, like I said, we went back across to his point, though, talking about how things were queued up. After you came out of the room, the huge pavilion where the symposium was, it's this massive line. And we're like jumping people going around just trying to get outside to go back to our hotel across the street.
Yeah.
And some lady, you know, she had a guy in a wheelchair. She could made some snarky comment. I'm like, we're not waiting in this. We're trying to get out of here to go across the street. We're not even going to the signing. Yeah. We have nothing, you know, but they were going outside to get back. Yeah. It was, because we went back over and sat in the bar, and then Taco came over there, and then Sarah was over there. Yeah. And Andrea and I, we're just watching people stand in the heat, man. I mean, it was.
Could have been done better, in my opinion. I'm not used to that sort of heat from where I'm from. So it was quite difficult to be in that heat for such a long time. And I'm sure we could have all looked at that and gone, here we can have done this step. You know, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but they got to take into consideration a lot of other factors as well. And okay, the museum's open, so they got to deal with that as well. But having people stand outside for a couple of hours, you know, and it took them a little while, you know, for me, it seemed like it took them a little while for clicking to go, oh, we need water because this is red hot weather. Very short-sighted, in my opinion. Could have been done differently.
What's surprising to me, though, this is the National World War II Museum. Like you said, you go in, like Jeff said earlier, you go in there and they had Tom Hanks pre-record some monologue stuff, and they've had other large events. This isn't your local museum ran by your local Veterans Affairs chapter who, you know, got this graciously donated to them as a charity event, and they were in over there. You figure a place this big, who's had experiences, I'm sure, similar type deals would have. I don't know. I'm just a little surprised that they didn't have a better grasp on the logistics of this whole thing. It's just kind of surprising to me.
Well, you know, you like to think, you know, if they do anything else, you know, they do it again, you know, for the Pacific or Band of Brothers again, say for the 25th or the 30th, you know, they can look at it and go, you know, lessons learned, you know, like yourself, you know, ex-military, you look at something goes wrong. Why did it go wrong? You know, so I say, what can we do differently to make it run smoother next time?
I mean, I don't want it. Look, it's a great facility. We love the people there. They've been good to us. It's all points being duly taken here. I mean, it's a great place to go visit. A lot of fun. That aspect that was just being mentioned is certainly that was true.
But they shut the bar at 10 o'clock. I mean, what is that about?
Well, that's not the museum. That's a new.
That's the hotel.
In New Orleans, look,
A lot of things have changed.
Since
the
pandemic.
The days of pulling up to a hotel and having bellhops come out and get your bags and valet your car so you can just walk in and get your room, it's not like that anymore.
Then again, we're all old enough to remember you used to be able to check your baggage at the curbs at the airports. Those days a long time too.
You go in. We had to drive it. This is now Leighton obviously flew in and took a cab. For us, we drove. This is after 5.5 hours on the road. We're coming through. I mean, you know, driving in New Orleans is not like driving in Birmingham. So it's raining. There's people everywhere. I don't know the streets. We're trying to navigate to the parking deck. We made 2 busted passes because the entrance is not easy to see, and there were delivery trucks blocking it.
Mm-hmm.
So we get past, finally come back around, and we're like, that's it. We got to go left in there. Not an easy turn. We get up to the third level of the parking deck. You get out, and we're schlepping our – this is me, Jack, and Andrea, okay? Hauling all our bags down 3 floors in the parking deck to where to get in. And everybody's carrying their own bags. There are no – you know, like I said, man, it's not like it. This is not the World War II Museum. This is traveling in general. I think things have changed a lot. I think COVID and staffing, that's my point here. This is not throwing rocks at a facility. It's my point that COVID has changed a lot of things.
You know, and what you said about staffing, we often forget about the great resignation of 2021, 2022. I went to, side note, Carrie had physical therapy tonight. I dropped her off, went to the gym, came back, have a podcast, don't have time to make dinner, stopped at Arby's. Sign on the drive-thru sign. We're closing at 8 tonight due to lack of staff. So definitely staffing is a big issue. People, you know, especially younger cats, they expect more than what places are willing to pay, and so no one wants to work.
Yeah. Jeff, beautiful museum. I mean, beautiful hotel.
Sure.
But my wife, Andrea, knows. She's like, I mean, this place is world-class, but I mean, it's like there could be more people working there, you know, and that's not the museum's fault. It's just the way it is now.
I think it's managed by...
it's Hilton.
Hilton, yeah. Like, you know, like I says, waiting for a drink, you know. Well, first of all, the bar shut was at 10 o'clock.
That's crazy for New Orleans.
Saturday night. I mean, my God, like even...
With a major event there.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, that was very disappointing. But you order a drink and you wait in half an hour. And not an overly busy place.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just, that was crazy for me. You know, I've always thought you guys, you know, hospitality is your game, you know, in America. But I mean, again, you know, whether that's, it's managed by the Hilton, whether that's Hilton's responsibility in getting the staffing all down to the museum, I don't know. But that was pretty poor. But like I said, it was a gorgeous hotel, beautiful hotel. Really was, you know, everything about, you know, the food was gorgeous, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just like I said, things took time. Like I said, a minus point on the weekend, but it didn't disrupt them, did it? Because we were talking.
Oh, yeah. It was a blast. I mean,
incredible.
Me, even Jeremy, we ordered a beer and he's like, dang, man, is it taking this long to get a beer over here?
Yeah.
You know, so I get up and go check on it.
I mean, yeah, even with a museum employee telling us the bar is closed, yet they're in there having a little hoo-ha. And I thought, whoa, you know, you're across the road, sweetheart. You know, I didn't say that. But I was like, being a little bit, you know, overprotective of the cast, but we've been socializing them for the evenings before. You know, I thought that was a bit bizarre. That's my own personal take on that. But outstanding, you know, other than that, you know, outstanding weekend. It was a fantastic event, outstanding facilities. The museum was incredible. And like Jeff said, you know, probably a little bit more artifacts would be nice, but it doesn't take away anything from the museum and what they do, because it is pretty phenomenal.
Jeff, you got any questions or comments?
Deeply regret that I couldn't be there.
Me too.
I'd love to be complaining about it taking too long to get a beer, hanging out with you guys.
I know Jeff and I were talking before the show, and we kind of joked about it when you guys came on before we went live. It's like, Jeff, like we're the only ones out of like all the entire World War II podcast community that didn't go to this thing.
I'm there.
It's like we totally dropped the ball.
You don't know about it.
Hey, this is the first thing I've done in like forever.
So, I know, but
I mean, like going to a museum is what I mean.
But respect to Henry, you know, we've had you plugged it a few times, and I'm seeing social media like, hey, there's Freddie, there's Sarah, there's Leighton, there's Henry. I'm like, okay, there's everybody. There's Taco. It's like, yeah, me and Jeff are like, okay, we're just here in Florida,
Scott
Texas.
Gibson was a little bit disappointed not to be there as well. He hasn't told me that, but you know, he obviously sent me a couple of DMs, and
I love Travis Scott being there, and I think obviously, you know, personal circumstances probably dictated that a little bit for him, but you know, I think he's another one. So you're not alone. I think, you know, he, you know, and it'd been great to have had everyone there, you know, all the friends that we've made.
Maybe next week, Jeff and I I was going to say maybe next week, Jeff and I and Scott will get together and we'll do a podcast called We Lonely Three.
he may come back for the thing for the international conference in November. Can you guys get over to New Orleans for that?
Jeff, you and I, we need to get the three of us need to get together and figure something out. You know, it's not that far of a drive from here, from Florida. I'm not sure how far of a drive it is from where you're at. And obviously you got a busy schedule for friends and family, but I definitely want to try to make it happen. Now that I actually have a career that pays my vacation days, I definitely want to make it happen. So we'll
just keep it in mind. I mean,
no, I definitely want to.
Cool. If we could hook up, you know, and.
Well, that's what I was joking earlier today. I was like, you know, I said, how absurd is it that Leighton made it across the pond to visit Henry in person before Jeff and I made it to meet Henry in person? And we've been on this podcast together for what, a year and a half now, and we've yet to meet up in person.
About a year, coming up on a year.
Timeline's so crazy since the pandemic. Speaking of can't take anywhere, what is it like to be in public in person with Mr. Freddie Farnsworth? Is he
amazing?
Boom!
Even better. He's a teddy bear. So funny.
Really? He wasn't loud and boisterous? Yeah. You didn't find yourself kind of...
I like the way you segued that. Now, speaking of not being able to take anywhere or go out in public.
I don't know. I just picture him at that bar just with an open bottle of, you know, Maker's Mark. Actually, no. Larceny. I knew Freddie and I were going to get along one day. Before going on the air, he saw me... I'm out of it, but I usually take a hit off my Larceny bottle, and most people have no idea what it was. And him just, you know, he's like, oh, if I knew it was going to be a Larceny type of night, it's like, oh, me and this guy are going to get along just fine. But yeah, I just picture the loud, boisterous, rambunctious Freddie just, holding court.
I mean, the actors loved him. You know, they were pulling him left, right, and center. And, you know, I was really lucky enough to have breakfast with him twice, and Taco, he holds court. That's his personality. He's that kind of guy. I mean, when was it? You know, when did I arrive? Thursday night, you know, and Lance was there with this lady. You know, I was there, you know, with Sarah and Freddie. And I think Ryan and his wife turned up later on, and he was holding court. He was brilliant. You know, he's got a lot more stories, and he's just as great in person as he is through the computer screen. He really is. He really is. He's brilliant. Such a nice guy as well. He was really gracious.
You know, I'm trying to think what's something you have to provide for Leighton to get the full American experience before he goes home. And I figure you got to take him to one of three places, and I'll let you decide which one, Henry. Either they take him to Walmart, a Super Target, or a Bass Pro Shop, one of those three stores, to give him the full American experience.
Well, if I take him to a Walmart...
He can view the beauty and the dichotomy of the American experience, because you'll see a man in a dress.
A couple NASCAR t-shirts.
you get a NASCAR t-shirt, you'll see a dude in a dress, and you'll maybe put your wallet in your front pocket as you're walking through the parking lot.
That is a cultural experience that he needs.
But I've got a Baby Ruth in my travel bag, if that counts.
No, that chewing gum,
is it? With baseball on the front, you know, the cartoon baseball character as well on the front. Does that count?
No, that won't get you there. We need to do better than that.
I'm trying. Can you guys hear me? Because either my headphone. Oh, okay. It was my
headphones. Yeah, we hear you fine.
I thought my microphone went on. I just switched like from pot one to pot four, but it turned out it was my headphones.
You're good. We're probably not coming in that good because I don't have my headphones. I started using my AirPods. I figured out how to match them up to this laptop. So our next show, I'll use my AirPods. That when I was on Woody's show last week, that worked really good. I thought liked it way better than the goofy headphones.
Jeff, I feel remiss. You know, you were saying earlier that you haven't been around for a while. Is there anything we need to get caught up on? I know you've been super busy and been active. Anything we need to get caught up on in your world over there?
I accepted a position teaching this year on some content that I haven't covered before, with the stipulation that I started this past Saturday going through the teacher certification process through TEA, Texas Education Agency. And it's a 300-hour
wow
course in 10 months. So I actually had to put my bachelor's on hold to get the certification by May. So it's about 4 days a week right now for the next 3 weeks. And then after that, it's going to be worth it. I can't wait, but it's a lot, especially since my students come in the classroom Wednesday. That's our first day.
Ours are already back. And by the way, the training never stops. As you know, Carrie has been a fourth grade teacher for 8 years, and she just moved to second grade. Lovely time to blow out her leg. But our school started last week, and over the weekend, she's like, oh, I got these training videos I got to watch. I think it's like 40 minutes. Turns out she has 5 separate modules. Each module has 40 minutes worth of content. So this weekend, she's like, there's so much training to do. And so it never ends. It never ends. So prepare yourself for that. But you're going for high school, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Secondary. So it'll be a certification in trades and industries. So I'll be able to cover, quite a bit. I'm teaching 5 sections of principles of hospitality and tourism. And like what Leighton said, hospitality is kind of our thing here in America. And, it's kind of an interesting, it's an interesting class to be teaching. There's a lot of history in it, so I'm going to enjoy that, kind of make it, my own. But it's important. People need these kind of skill sets of customer service and working with people, working for people. So that's, that's some of the stuff I'll be covering. So because of some of my prior experience, that's going to help, with this process. But it's a lot, but we do it.
Speaking of hospitality, I saw a TikTok this weekend, and it was a gentleman from another country, not America, and he was talking about the 5 things that annoyed him about America. And one of the things was our over inundation of advertising, and that has that stood out to you at all? Do we seem like we're just overwhelmed with advertising and billboards and just overall marketing here compared to what you see back home?
I've noticed that on the what do you call it?
The motorway.
What's called that? Oh, the highway.
That's the interstate, man.
The old interstate.
I noticed there's a lot of, service stops. There's a KFC, there's a Subway, there's a, a Sonic, which, Henry's son ordered a Coke and chocolate, which I thought was absolutely incredible. I noticed, there's a lot of service stops like that. And you do get that with the UK, but they're really spaced out with the service station. They're like 20 miles between each stop. I mean, unless you pull off and you're going into town and obviously you go to a service station, a petrol station there, and you fill up, you grab a Coke or something. But if you want to a McDonald's or a KFC or a Pizza Hut, you go to they're 20 miles apart. But here I noticed that they were really close
every
together.
4 miles.
It was quite continuous. Yeah. I've noticed, in terms of advertisement, there's a lot of Auburn and Alabama fans. People are really representing it in their college team over here. Lots of billboards.
That's all there is around here, man.
Now he's like, now I know why Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube have so much damn advertising. They're all American-based companies.
I didn't really pick up on anything. I mean, we went to Montevallo.